Hi everyone, it's Cynthia Dearen here. I am super excited to let you know that throughout the month of March, to coincide with International Women's Day, we're launching the Girls Go Global campaign. And we're going to be awarding a full scholarship to the International Business Accelerator to one lucky female entrepreneur. I created the IBA to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of taking a company international. And along the way, I've realized that there are not very many women on the international business scene, given the number of companies that are out there. And I don't think that's right. So I'm on a mission to change it. What we're going to be doing is awarding one female business owner a full scholarship to the program to give her all the tools she needs to make her business an international success. We'll also follow her journey and let you know how she goes. To celebrate the competition and to help spread the word, I'll be interviewing a very successful female entrepreneur every week throughout the month of March on the Business Beyond Borders podcast. My guests will be sharing their insights about the highs and lows of taking a business international, and we'll be talking about the challenges that they faced that their male counterparts didn't have to deal with. We'll also be talking about where they get their inspiration from and their top tips for success. The International Business Accelerator is a digital program, so it and the scholarships are open to anyone anywhere in the world, although if you are applying for a scholarship, I would suggest that it's probably better if you are a woman. If you're a female founder or you know someone who fits the bill, please visit our website to find out more and put your application in. Just go to internationalbusinessaccelerator.com/girls-go-global. Check it out. Stephanie, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Terrific to be on the show. Looking forward to meeting yourself.
I wanted to start by asking you a really quick question about the multinational anti-avoidance law, which is MAL, which came into effect in Australia just over 2 years ago. Can you tell us really quickly what it is, and can you tell us what you think of it?
Yes. The multinational tax was introduced as a fairer way for multinationals to ensure that they are paying the right tax in the country of origin, which, as you're aware, that there's many multinationals and we deal with them. You see them all the time, like Apple and Google, LinkedIn and all those players. What the ATO are aiming to do is ensuring that they are not moving their profit somewhere like Ireland, where it's much lower tax. I think it's a fair tax. I think that all countries, and this is not just Australia, it's all OECD countries are involved, that everyone's going to be involved in this, these big companies, including Google, and we're already starting to see that.
And what do you think, I mean, what, just tell me a little bit about what you're actually seeing as a result of that law coming into place.
Yes, there is more transparency and reporting, and I could give you an example. So, it is aiming at the larger end of town. So if there's a multinational with a group revenue of $1 billion, even if the Australian subsidiary is small, they now have to report. In the past, if you're a multinational in Australia and you're a small multinational, you had audit relief and tax could have been minimised. But now that is under the microscope. And what this has actually done is allow further reporting and digging into those entities.
Right, I see. Okay, well,
now they're introduced.
Yeah.
Sorry, they've introduced country by country reporting, which they haven't done that before.
Okay, so that's something quite new.
Yes, correct.
So let's get on to talk about you, because that's really what we're here for today. When we're talking about interviewing you, you have what sounds to me like an Anglo-Saxon name. But as we were doing the research for the show, I noticed that you speak both Greek and Serbian. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, I can. I was born in Australia. My mother and father came on the boat in the early 60s, as the immigrants did. And my mother's background is she's from Greece on the island of Crete. And my father was Serbian, which is a country in Yugoslavia. So I was born here and I was married to an Englishman. And that's why I have that name there. But my maiden name is Bera, B-E-R-A.
Okay.
And I suppose I'm divorced now. I should probably go back to it, but the reason I don't is because I'm a director on so many companies, it's a pain in the butt to get all that changed.
Too much paperwork.
Exactly. And even accountants like myself don't enjoy the paperwork.
Absolutely. I was wondering, do you think the fact that you had this sort of international background from way back in your history, do you think that that had an effect or played any part in the fact that you started a business that turned into a business with international clients?
I believe it did. And the reason I did is I believe, not just myself, I believe, and particularly women could do anything they desire. Nothing can stop you except imagine, you know, it's just yourself that's stopping you.
Yeah.
Yes, that had a factor involved. My parents came here with nothing. They wanted a better life for their children, which, you know, that has eventuated. And, of course, we want the same for our children.
Yeah.
So that is in my blood.
That is a great place to start. So let's talk about where you kind of got started. You've been in accountancy and business advisory for 24 years. Tell me about the beginning of that journey and how did you actually decide that was the field that you wanted to be in?
Well, it's a funny thing. What I desired to be didn't eventuate, and the reason was I wanted to do audio engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And my father died when I was young, and I was brought up in a very strict Greek culture. And my mother thought, well, audio engineering is not a job for the girls.
Okay.
And at that time, there wasn't that many opportunities, and it was good that my school had work experience, and I joined a company in that time as work experience, and I thought, no, this is for me. And because I was taking care of the family at the time due to those circumstances, I thought it was just a natural progression to get into accountancy. I had my last corporate job was with actually a multinational, a Japanese medical company that set up in Australia. They had two divisions that came out. I was recruited by Deloitte. I came through there for this role and I really loved it. But what made me, and I know it's one of the questions I may lead to, what made me go into business was back in the early 90s, I left because I was working long hours and I needed that flexibility for the family. That certainly wasn't there in the workplace.
Mm.
And certainly there was no support then, not just the company, but in a childcare situation. So I left. I must say Deloitte were very supportive at the time and said, oh, what do you want to do? I said, oh, look, I'll be at home for 6 months, work part-time or something like that. And they actually referred me a few clients and that's how the journey started.
So that was really your employer helping you to step out on your own?
Yes, I think because I was dealing with the SME, they were saying that, look, we've got some small clients, we can't deal with them. We know that you're in that space. Would you like to help us? And I did. And that probably allowed me then to start my business.
Mm.
And the idea, I think you got the question about what's, you know, working for international clients. I felt back then there was certainly a huge opportunity to do so.
Yes. More than now, do you think?
The opportunities were there, yes, because it was a fairly new thing, working with multinationals. Back then, it was only the big four that were really handling these global clients. But things like Sarbanes-Oxley, CLERP 9, these are things that happened due to independence started shaking the industry and stated that, well, okay, if an accounting firm or someone's dealing as an audit, they can't do the accounting, you need that independence. And to me, I felt that was a great opportunity and to go into this field and help multinational companies and startups.
So tell me where that transition kind of came from working with SMEs in Australia to working with multinationals. Tell me, is there a bit of a story around that, or do you remember the first time that you had a multinational international client?
Yes, the ones that I was referred by were offices in Australia, startups from multinationals. And straight away, you got to learn who was the stakeholders and who the headquarters were, because you had to report to them. Working with multinationals and what makes them successful is that they do have good governance and reporting. They have to, because someone's consolidating in some headquarters and has to know what's going on globally. Today, that's much easier to do, but back then, there was no internet and communication was longer, but it was still possible.
And so, as time went on, what was that really where the entire business shifted to? You know, to that,
yes,
to dealing with those massive international clients.
It did, and also around that time, it was just the start of the goods and services tax was introduced. That also had other opportunities for local companies and including multinationals, because they had to also abide by the GST rules, the new GST rules. So that there was local and international, but I tended to focus more on the international, and one, because I knew the services they required and how I could help them, and they were certainly my target client.
And how did you go about acquiring these clients? Was this all word of mouth and people just referring you international clients, or did you actually have to go out and pitch to these clients and travel around to try and get them interested in what you could offer?
There was certainly a lot, and around that time the internet was introduced, and I said that was the biggest game changer, because all of a sudden, I think I must have been one of the first people to join LinkedIn. Because that allowed me then to without flying over there. I mean, at that time, I had a young family and I wasn't able to travel as much. My husband at the time was doing a lot of traveling because he was working with a multinational. So I was at home, but that didn't stop me, because companies like LinkedIn and the internet allowed me to reach out. So what I did is I looked for strategic partners. That was the best thing. Started lawyers who were dealing with these multinationals. And that started the ball rolling. Also, what assisted me was marketing the website. And I attended the first Women in Business courses, one of the first ones, which later years I then became the mentor as well. That was a great journey. And we talked, you know, in that program, they ask you about your ideal client, which was the multinational, and how to reach those people. And that was, you know, a lot of the times it was having those conference calls in different time zones. And I believe that is still the success of it.
Yeah, actually reaching out and targeting people who you want to work with.
Yes.
And so who, where, maybe when you started and as you went on, where have most of these clients come from? Do they come from particular countries or particular industries?
I mainly targeted the English-speaking countries because I was working with some Japanese, certainly US, UK and Canada, they were the first natural ones I were drawn to, just the fact that they have similar laws and the similar customs. So that was the first step in certainly the 90s and in 2000, around that time. And that was probably, that started to evolve from there. And then I reached out to other countries in Asia Pacific. But most of these countries these days speak English, so it is fantastic.
Now, I was going to ask you, well, who is your ideal international client? But I think I'm actually going to ask you, tell us about a client that you really loved working with. You know, who have you got a favourite one that you thought was just heaps of fun?
Look, I don't have a particular industry. I tend to be drawn just because I'm interested in technology and technology clients coming out here. Look, I also visited the Consumer Electronics Show 2 or 3 years ago, and what I saw there, and I also met with the US Commercial Service. They helped me identify the sort of clients that were looking to come to Australia, and the technology that I saw, we don't even recognise that in, we don't even see that in Australia as yet.
Wow. What, give me an
and
example.
There's so much more to come. Oh, an example would be all the drones that were flying everywhere in this show. And because away, this one, you could resonate with this one. Because I was away from my home, I was thinking, oh, who's feeding the cat? Who's watering the pot plants? There was a drone that actually watered the plants.
I love it.
I thought I want that. My son wasn't going to do it. So, you know, I thought I left all these notes for the kids, but I thought, wouldn't it be easier to get the drone? They're more obedient.
That's absolutely hilarious. So it's really that tech space that gets you excited.
It does. And there were so many new things. One of the clients that we were looking at, and they are bringing a product in, I know the health thing is really important, but there was one, there were socks where they had a monitor in the sock that when you were running or walking, it measured your steps on the app.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And the question I asked, how many times can you wash these socks?
Before they wear out.
Before they wear out. I said about 30 times. So I thought that was interesting, but apps that measure your heartbeat, your blood pressure, and you have all these apps on your phones, how amazing is that?
That's an amazing example of wearable tech, isn't it? And
that's
wearable
it.
Software. So yes. going back to your journey for a moment, you've actually had a couple of companies in this accountancy and business advisory space, right? So can you just walk us through what happened? You were at Deloitte, you left, you started the company, you grew it, you started to work with international clients. Then what happened?
Because we were working with the Big Four, I mean, and sorry, just with Deloitte's, they had a HR that I worked through and I wasn't really employed by them, but it was more like a recruitment service they had at the time. They don't have it now, which maybe they did that for their clients, which were international. So I had to go through them and a stringent HR process to their client. So, but I was still in touch with them. And back then, between, say, 2000 and 2008, we got a lot of referrals and worked very closely with the Big Four. And the reason we did, we're in that space, but we were mainly dealing with the smaller end of town, the SMEs of those multinationals. We were working with Ernst & Young at the time, and they then formed, they actually sold their non-core business and a whole lot of these Big Four entities did at the time to form a huge international outsourcing group, which were part of EY, KPMG and those. And because we work with them, they approached me and said, we'd like to buy you out. At the time, I wasn't selling, but I thought it was a good opportunity. So I did. I stayed with them. There was a 2-year stint with them, and there's then a non-compete after that. So that was a whole acquisition. I decided, because I was passionate about what I did and I still feel that I had this market and understood it, I started the process again.
Wow.
And with nothing. Wow. The only thing I had was knowledge. The internet was better, the cloud computing came into force. I was able to upscale very quickly with all these new innovation that was out there, and I did. and I probably now have triple the clients. And just recently, I have merged with another entity just to give me that scalability.
And do you think you were able to scale up so quickly because you'd already done it, so you really understood what it was that you were doing much better than the first time, and then you could just take the technology and really use that as a kind of force multiplier?
Yes, that was it. There was some challenges because when I went back to those, when I went back the second time, and we did get a lot of referrals from these big four, I went back to some of them and they even said, no, sorry, we're not going to refer because we are going to do this now.
Oh, right.
So, wow. Yes. So they told me that, matter of fact. So I thought, great, I'm glad I've got a lot of contacts. So I then had to look outside the square and deal differently where they wouldn't maybe normally would go to find a client. So I had to, and the scaling up was great. The cloud computing was great. That allowed me, you can work anywhere at any place, including overseas. So that was the game changer. I then went back because we used to work with the consulates and the chamber, the International Chamber of Commerce. So I certainly went back to those and tackled those good relations, and ever burning your bridges, I think it was a big assistance for me.
Yeah. Look, when people would say, you know, when you tell people I've got an international business, I think that there is a perception out there and people often imagine that it's very glamorous. But as you and I know, running an international business can also be pretty tough. And we've just kind of alluded to or touched on some of the challenges you had when you started a new business in the same field. I wonder whether you could either share a bit more around that or another example of a time when you found that it was really challenging working in this international space, and whether you could just tell us a bit about how you dealt with that difficult time and what it taught you.
Yes, sure. Look, there is certainly challenges in any business, and I think in some so in the international, rightly say, you've got to reach those people overseas. You don't know their customs. You don't know really, you know, much about them. We're here in Australia. If you're dealing with them, you can certainly quickly get around and find out who you're dealing with. So that's some of the challenges. I think looking outside the square and trying to do something different played a part. And look, sure, we made mistakes and we thought, okay, was that the best approach? You will go through that, like everyone does. The challenges were for me that I didn't go back to my old clients. I didn't want to, and that was the right ethical thing to do. Mm-hmm. Though some did come back. I had to start from scratch. The challenge back there for me was the GFC. That just happened as I sold, and people started. You know, people had less money. Things were very competitive, and certainly in the industry I'm in, became competitive also due to globalization. Because you have people saying, well, why would I, you know, deal with an accountant in Sydney where I could go to the Philippines with a fraction of the cost? Sure, you know, service delivery is just the technical side. There's a whole lot of other stuff that goes on, and you know, that is obviously an ongoing challenge.
And so what do you think your biggest kind of learning was out of that, you know, that challenge of really starting over and having to reach a whole bunch of new people? If there was kind of a takeaway out of that for you, what was it?
One was never give up. Certainly don't put all your eggs in one basket. As I said, I got a lot of referrals by the big four, also lawyers and others, but I relied probably earlier days on those. The second time, I didn't have that. So I had to find out, research, how am I going to reach my ideal client? That's like saying, how do I know which company overseas wants to come to Australia? We don't know that, but yes, we can certainly We can certainly target strategic partners of those. So they could be lawyers, accountants, consultants, freight forwarders, recruiters, everyone that deals with someone that comes to Australia.
Yes.
And that's how I had to do. So all of a sudden, I had different people I had to reach and in different situations. Certainly, a lot of networking. As you know, you do a lot of networking, and I've learnt and accept that even if you go to so many network functions, you're not going to get your ideal client there. However, in time, people get to know you, and they will then refer because they know you've been around and they've seen you again.
On that,
So.
do you think, I mean, how valuable do you believe networking is? Because as you've pointed out, you don't always get your ideal, you don't rock up at a cocktail party and suddenly your ideal client just materializes in front of you. Do you think that it's something that is worth investing time and energy in, or do you think that there are faster ways to actually get the clients you're looking for?
I think there's, I think you have to use different means, and we now live in a more technologically advanced situation where we can reach through, like LinkedIn, Facebook, and all the social media than before. Certainly, networking is a process, I would say, and like every process, which we'll probably talk about further on about the books I read, is it's a process. So it's great to go to these events. I love meeting people personally, but you always have to follow up.
Yes.
Also, researching yourself. I mean, like how I researched you. So I thought, wow, she's in the space. She's done a lot. I need to meet her. And we did. And we're still following up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, look, I think there's really something in that.
And then I know, wow, you're in a fantastic space. I want to help you. I like just doing that. But that's karma to me because I know that if I help you, a lot of more people are you. And then, who knows what happens from it? That's all I'm expecting. I just think good things will happen.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really good point. I think that's a really, really positive way to look at it. I wanted to talk a bit now about what Penguin actually does. Can you tell us a little bit about how you help your clients, and particularly your international clients these days? So I know, for example, one of the things you do is that you have a virtual CFO service. Can you just tell us a little bit about what that looks like?
Yeah, sure. Look, Penguin Management, and why we call ourselves Penguin Management, is the first place is yes. If you see how a penguin is, they're in a colony or they're in a team. They look business-like, and that was the reasoning behind the name. But we help companies come here to go through all the compliance and assist them with that process, but not just, okay, we've done, we've set a company up and we act as their resident director. Apart from that, we help with their managing their operations. And how we do that is they would have salespeople on the ground. We would look after them. We would make sure they have contracts that are Australian compliant. We communicate with headquarters. We want this subsidiary here to succeed. So we help their office by managing their teams, by ensuring they are compliant. They have to be, we have to sign some legal documents we go through with them because they would not be au fait with all the Australian laws. So we do get involved in a whole lot of array of services, including the accounting, the tax, also the HR, the bookkeeping, and the company secretarial, which is important.
And do
So
you
the
find it?
CFO's,
Yeah, go ahead.
sorry, the CFO service, what that means is we will ensure that, okay, they start up here. This would be with any company that starts up. And I think it'd be the same if you went overseas. You need to know what's the company constitution, what's the laws, what's the tax laws, how much do I have to pay? Am I looking after the employees? what pension systems there are and healthcare for them. These are the primary things that these multinationals are looking for.
And is there anything that you think multinationals find particularly challenging when they come to Australia to set up, or you know, is it pretty easy to do in an Australian context?
Generally speaking, working in Australia or setting up in Australia, it's fairly straightforward. However, companies don't understand when we set up, we also set up bank accounts for them and all the regulations that go around that. We help them with that and go through all the red tape, you can say, and all the legal jargon. So we make it simple for them. Once we have everything, it is quite a simple process and it doesn't take that long. But knowing that and communicating that information to them and just ensuring that, you know, we're here, we're going to look after them and they trust us, that's the big component. If you could just imagine you go overseas and you're allowing your CFO or your accountant over there, a person you may not know, be trusted with lots of money, with their staff, I think there's a huge trust element in it.
It's great to see a woman running a really successful business and having done it twice in an area that's pretty male dominated on the whole. I want to ask you, you know, have you found being a businesswoman in this international and this fairly kind of hard edge space, have you found it challenging, you know, from the perspective of being somebody who is female?
I could say that although there has been some progress over the years, it is challenging. But, you know, I just think that we shouldn't lose sight that we are female and we should, you know, we shouldn't certainly be thinking and acting like a male. I think a female brings different dynamics to anything, to a business situation. Mm. We are more nurturing despite that's just how we are. And I just think that we shouldn't lose sight of that and that our service offering may be different to males, and that's a good thing. I don't think it's a challenge. I think that there's so many men out there and as opposed to a female, I'm going to do it differently and this is the reason I'm going to do it. So the networks that I deal with, there is, you know, certainly some more, definitely more males. But what I'm seeing in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, there is groups of women in those organisations. For example, I was last night at the Australian Institute of Company Directors. They had a women's group and I attended that network. 20 years ago, they wouldn't have had that. So it is good to see the women out there, and I think they should never think there's a barrier. I'm not saying there's no challenges, but I just think that we have to be confident and anything's reachable if you go for it.
You just set your mind to it. Tell me a little bit about raising a family and running a business at the same time, because I'm sure that has been something which has had its moments as well. How did you do it?
Well, that was one of the reasonings I got into in business, because of the flexibility. When I started the business, I was working not a normal 9-to-5 because I wanted to attend schools and participate in the reading for the children. You know, my children now are 24 and 20, and I just remember them as a baby, you know, 5 years, milestone, 10 years. That was soon yesterday. Time goes so quick. It's very important that you spend that time with them. And why I got into the business, because of the flexibility. There was certainly challenges, but I was lucky enough in the area that I was in was international. When the children went to bed, say, for example, after dinner, I was able to get on the phone to Europe and speak to someone in their time, which wasn't a problem for me, or get up earlier before the kids got up and then speak to North America, New York. So in some ways that helped, having those different time zones and having the flexibility.
And so you just kind of, you made it work.
Look, we made it work because we had family support. There was childcare then. You need to have those support networks, otherwise it won't work.
Yes.
You can get a nanny in. You know, it's interesting that over in, say, Asian countries or Dubai, they have a lot of helpers.
Yeah.
Fortunately, we don't have that luxury here, do we?
I think it's definitely more difficult than it is in some other places.
It is. It is.
Now, you've got a strong interest in women in business, which we touched on briefly a little bit a little while ago. Can you just tell me about some of the projects related to this women in business field that you've been involved in? You know, maybe a couple of your favourite ones.
Yeah, sure. I think the one that resonated was that I was on a Austrade mission to the Middle East. And that was led by the Premier. She wasn't the Premier at that stage, but the Minister, Christina Keneally, because she was female. She had to come along with us.
Yes.
And we were going to the Middle East. So the challenge, you could imagine there, the women over there were very interested to know about our business, and we had to share. Also, in our group, there were women who were to reach out for business in the Middle East, and the trade mission was about the connections, the meetings, and just meeting the people there.
Mm.
That was fabulous. One, the culture was so diverse, opposite our culture, and understanding how they do business is very important, because we do have to bear in mind the culture. If we go international, we have to understand the culture and how people act. Certainly that was trained for us at the time. And, you know, an example would be if we went to Dubai, if you go to Dubai and you are meeting with someone there, it's always best to have someone else with you if you're in with a man, if you're meeting a man. I don't know why, maybe it's a cultural thing.
Yep.
That was something different that we were taught and experienced. The women there, they were quite bold, who were wanted to come to Australia and expand their service offering, and what they learnt a lot about us, how we deal with business here. So to me, just that cultural understanding was very viable and very interesting for me, because I think we do have to deal with countries, particularly the non-speaking English countries, which have different cultures.
Yeah.
Now, I do remember there was one of these ladies and she did succeed, so I would like to share this, that she had a kitchen in the Blue Mountains, near the Blue Mountains, and she was making lavash. Do you remember that? Those biscuits, the lavash biscuits. She had, yes, a kitchen, she was making those. And it was interesting because how she made them, she obviously thought about the culture here, the multicultural here, you know, the olives and all the foods that would go with that type of biscuit. What she did is she introduced it to a few firms up there, and I'm glad to say that on the Emirates flights, her biscuits are now on every Emirates. So what a great achievement that would have been.
That's a great achievement. Well, that's
including
really
Woolworths and Coles here. So this is a lady that was able to do that from her home, and then, of course, she's expanded into her own factory.
And I like that story because I think that a lot of people, and especially a lot of women who are running businesses, maybe in their spare room or maybe on the kitchen table, think, oh, well, you know, I've got this business and it generates me some money, but I couldn't expand my business internationally. That's way too difficult. That's not something that I could achieve. But, you know, your own story and the example that you've just shared of the biscuit company demonstrates that if you actually want to, you can achieve it if you've got enough determination and the right tools to do it.
You're absolutely right there. And look, I started work from home, and you know, there is so many different platforms, there's so many different opportunities. If you need to meet someone in the city, you can use the virtual offices that's available now that wasn't there. I always think that Even through your website and your marketing, think big, think that you are these global companies, because it's only a perception and how you deal with it. That's all it is.
There is a Glenn Carlson, who is somebody that I've worked with in the past who mentors and teaches small business. Glenn is very fond of saying perception is reality. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. So if somebody thinks that you are big and reputable, they're going to treat you as though you are. And if they believe that you're small and disreputable, they're also going to treat you that way. So it's really important that as much as you can, you make people believe that you're big and reputable.
Exactly. And that is true.
Let's move on to books. And I wanted to ask you whether there are any books that have profoundly influenced you. And if you could tell us, maybe, I don't know if you've got several, maybe you have a whole list. Some people don't want to recommend any book. Some people have heaps of books that they want to talk about. But I wondered whether there are a couple of books that have really had an impact on your life, and you could tell me what they are, and then we could just talk about each of those and why you've chosen them.
It's terrific. Look, one book that is still in my mind is by Richard Branson. I do follow him. Losing My Virginity, I thought that was a great journey of where he started and where he began. He's a visionary. Certainly the whole journey and, you know, making it till you fake it, he certainly went through all that. I thought it was a great book. The other one is, these are all different books, by the way, but the other one is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. The reason that when you do start a business, it does, when you read that book, it will go through how do you succeed when you do start small and what it means in the process to go to start expanding, because you do need to have those processes in place. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do them, but you have to identify that you will need staff, you will need systems. The book goes through that, and I think it's a very good book for people who are looking to start business and expand business.
Okay, so The E-Myth by Michael Gerber and Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson, which he's now followed up with a couple more. I believe the latest one is called Finding My Virginity, although I have to confess I haven't read it yet.
Exactly. The other book, it's probably more of recent times I've read, is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. That is a great book, and it's all these new technology. It's based on a lot of these new technology companies that do start up and don't have much resources in way of money and people, and how they quickly evolve, how you know, it's okay to make mistakes, and how to, it teaches you the different ways to identify if you have got a good product or service. I think that's quite a good book in these times. I regularly read that one.
Okay, so those are three great recommendations. So how can people get in touch with you if they would like to connect with you and use Penguin Services, or find out more about how they can connect in with you around the women in business stuff? Where should they go to look for you?
I think through my email or LinkedIn. Happy for you to share those details.
Do you want to just share it here on the recording so that people can go online straight away and look for you if they'd like to?
Yes. So my email is Stephanie, spelt with an F. So it's Stephanie at Penguin Accounts, penguinaccounts.com.au. I hope you got that, because I think we just paused for a moment.
That's all right. We'll put it into the show notes so that if people want to, they can actually download the show notes and they can find it there as well.
Sure. And I've got, I have got a bit of a guide. If there's anyone interested coming to Australia or wanting to set up, I do have a guide that provides all that information. I'm happy to share that.
Yeah, look, we'll get a link to that, and we can put that into the show notes as well, and people can click on the link and get hold of the guide.
terrific.
So, Stephanie, one of the reasons that I was really keen to have you on the show this month is that, as you know, we're currently running the Girls Going Global campaign to inspire, encourage and empower more women to take their companies international. I was wondering whether you had any final thoughts for the female entrepreneurs who are listening to this program and who are thinking about actually going out there and taking on the world.
I think they should go for it. First, have that dream, and dreams can be possible. Of course, understanding where that market is and who that market is, and then identifying who are the players in that. I mean, if by all means, they should be talking to Austrade, and there's so many other organisations as well that they can tap into, you know, just mainly to get information. LinkedIn is quite good if you want to reach out to some strategic partners. I think the social media is great. And also Chamber of Commerce's. If they're in a particular field, I think it's great for them to reach out or attend some of those Chamber of Commerce's. There's a lot of valuable information and a lot of connection in those organisations.
Stephanie, it has been great to have you on the show. It's been great to hear about the books that have inspired you and the journey that you've come on. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. And all I could just share is, look, go with your dreams and everything's possible.
Hey everyone, if you're enjoying the Business Beyond Borders podcast and you're thinking about expanding your company internationally, you might want to check out the International Business Accelerator, which is something I created to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of internationalization. The International Business Accelerator, or as we like to call it, the IBA, is a program built on the three principles of skills and knowledge, mentoring and accountability, and community. I built it especially for founders and CEOs who want to take their business to the next level and are wondering where to start. The program is structured in a way that's simple to follow. It's digital, so you can take part from anywhere in the world. It's a lot of fun and our members love it. So if that's you, if you're thinking about going global, check it out at internationalbusinessaccelerator.com.